You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on June 9th, 2016. My guest today is a software engineer in the Washington, D.C. area. He's a .NET and open source enthusiast and a Microsoft MVP. Dave Glick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm excited to be talking with you this evening about one of my favorite subjects, actually. So, yeah.
That's great. That's great. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners? Tell me a bit about your background and what you do.
Sure. Yeah, like many of your listeners, I'm a developer. I actually got my start back in the 80s programming on a Commodore 64. I'm doing little games in BASIC as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I actually really got interested when a dad of one of the neighborhood kids started giving programming lessons. So while all the other neighborhood kids were out doing basketball and soccer and stuff, one day a week, several of us would kind of huff it over across the street and all go down to the basement and bust out our Commodores and, you know, start getting to work. And this was back before there was debuggers and stuff. So we would, you know, we would print out these really long sheets of code and kind of help each other work through it. And I think that's probably what gave me a lot of appreciation for the communal aspect of software engineering, and particularly the open source community is, you know, maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but, you know, back in the days as a kid, kind of helping everyone go over their code and try and find their bugs the old fashioned way. You know, I think some of that probably still stuck with me.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I can't relate to spending summers in the basement in front of a computer at all.
Yeah, I'm sure no one listening to this can relate to that. Yeah, so I've been on the .NET stack now for a little over a decade. I've got my start doing web apps in PHP. I've had a stint in Java, did C++ for a while. But I've been pretty solid on .NET and C# now for a while.
Cool. Now, you wanted to talk about something called YAM. Can you tell me what YAM is?
Yeah, sure. So I tend to call it a static content generator or static generator toolkit. I think other products or libraries in this category stick to the term static site generator or static web generator. I'll get to why I kind of make a distinction there as we go. But in general, it takes input files of a particular format, whether it's markdown files or HTML files or text or Razor templates, does some stuff to them, and then spits something out on the other end. I mean, that something that it mm-hmm. spits out can be, you know, HTML, it can be CSS, it can be JavaScript, or it can even be something totally non-web related, like, you know, a PDF or ebook formats.
Yeah. So why did you create YAM?
So, you know, I'm a big .NET fan, and I won't make any apologies for being a fan of the platform and looking for .NET and C# solutions first when I have a problem. You know, it's always good to be polyglot and to look and see what's out there. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm more comfortable in those languages and in those technologies, and I know what else is around in that ecosystem. And so looking around, I didn't really see many good static generation tools within the .NET ecosystem. You know, there's some sort of general purpose generators in .NET that don't really get to web or anything like that. And there's some much more specific .NET generators, like I'll give a shout out to Sandra Snow, which is one I know about, built on the excellent Nancy web framework, and one called Pretzel by the Code52 folks back when they were trying to do a project a week. And both of those are excellent. They aim to kind of replicate Jekyll, which is one of the most popular static site generators out there. But when we look around in the .NET space, there really isn't anything that kind of fills that niche totally. You know, in Ruby, they have Jekyll, and Go, they've got Hugo, which is gaining a lot of momentum. Most other stacks have something that does this, and we just didn't. So I decided that it was maybe time to try and remedy that.
That's cool. Now, to be clear, you don't have to know a .NET language to use the tool. It's just written in .NET. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, the reason I'm writing it now, I started about a year and a half ago, not coincidentally around the time that Roslyn started to become generally available. I felt like this was the first chance that all of the technologies in the .NET space lined up to make something like this practical and easy to use for the average developer, even the average user. Like you said, you don't even have to be a .NET or C# developer to use this. It's configured through a domain-specific language, which is essentially just C# code. But we do a little bit of tricky stuff to make that C# code a bit easier to write for folks who may not be totally familiar with C# as a language. So the configuration file is both code, but also kind of simpler than code. You don't have to do a lot of the boilerplate you might have to do, like setting up a class or newing up objects or that kind of thing. So hopefully the barrier of entry there is fairly low. And actually, at the moment, the next big push that I'm working on is for something I'm calling recipes, which will make this process even easier and kind of get to a one command generation for particular use cases. Think a recipe for generating blogs, or a recipe for generating documentation sites. Yeah, or a recipe for generating PowerPoint slides, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, how long have you been using it, and what benefits are you seeing by using it?
Yeah, so I started development a little under 2 years ago, and almost immediately switched my personal sites, like my blog and project sites, OSS project sites, over to use it in order to dog food. Personally, I'm seeing a lot of benefit because it's flexible enough to let you essentially run arbitrary code during the generation process. So I can do fairly complicated things on these sites that I wasn't able to do with other more conventional static site generators. I have a pretty long background in using tools like Jekyll, Middleman, other static site generators. So, you know, I kind of learned from those experiences, and I find that I can generate much more powerful content using this tool because I can just code in C# to do things.
Okay, that's really interesting. Now, I have not used a static content generator. I should say I haven't used one for very long. So I'm kind of wondering, what are the benefits of using it as opposed to a traditional CMS? Or is that even a fair question?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think a question a lot of people have when they start looking at static site generators is, why is this better, or why should I prefer this to running a site in, say, ASP.NET or using a CMS like Drupal or .NET Nuke or something like that? And I think static is kind of an unfortunate term that's been used to label these kinds of tools, because it suggests that there isn't any dynamic content, that it's just very, like, almost boring. But that couldn't be further from the truth. And really, when you think about it, all websites, all web apps are quote unquote static at some point in their process, right? Once that stuff goes out over the wire to the client, you're delivering static stuff. You're delivering HTML files, you're delivering JavaScript, you're delivering CSS.
Sure.
So really, it's more a question of when does that compilation stage happen? When do you take the code that makes up your app and turn it into that static stuff that gets sent down to the client? So a static generator does that kind of beforehand. It does it in the absence of a user context, which is really the big difference. It's not so much that you're delivering static versus dynamic stuff. It's more that in a static generator, you're building that content at a point in time where you don't know anything about the requests. So that informs some of the decisions you have to make and how you structure the site. Mainly, it means that you have to kind of plan for every path or every eventuality. A good example is something like a tag engine. If you have a blog that has a bunch of different tags, and blog posts can have one or more tags on them. In a dynamic site, a traditional style site, you may wait for a web request that says, hey, I want to view the archive for this particular tag. And then you'd go and generate the page on the fly that has all the posts that relate to that tag. In a static generator viewpoint, you'd go and pre-generate all of the possible archives for all of the tags in the site. And so then when the user asks for a specific tag, you're just delivering to them stuff you've already generated. And I think there's a misconception nowadays about how you can do dynamic stuff with static sites. And we're slowly getting over that. I see static site generation becoming much more popular. And I think that's because people are realizing that it can exist in harmony or as part of a broader application strategy using things like web APIs, right? So we do a lot on the client now with frameworks like Angular, you know, all these JavaScript frameworks that do rendering and dynamic behavior on the client. You know, we can generate a lot of the stuff statically. And then for that little bit of extra stuff that we really do need dynamic behavior for, we can set up like a web API. And that way our dynamic aspects of the site or our runtime generated aspects can be solely focused on the data, which is really what runtime generation is all about. And all the presentation and that kind of thing, the front end, can all be done by a static generator.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, and there's a lot of benefits to that. You know, there's performance is an obvious benefit because you're not doing runtime generation. Security is another reason people are looking at this kind of thing. You know, you minimize the attack surface if all your web server has to do is deliver stuff that's already been generated.
I hadn't even considered that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, you can push the resources out to content delivery networks. You can more easily mirror things and do load balancing. It's easier on the servers, less resources. There's a lot of benefits to pre-generating your stuff as part of a integration or build pipeline and not relying on the runtime server to do everything for you.
I see. Very cool. Okay. So where should I go to start learning more about YAM?
So the best place is the YAM website. wyam.io. You know, the com was taken. So that has, I hope, what is pretty good documentation. And it's got some examples on there, a bunch of getting started content. And then the GitHub repository, which is wyam.io/wyam, also has a number of good examples. There's a examples folder there in the source that you can look at to kind of get a feel for what the configuration files look like. Yeah, I'm also on GitChat, as are several of the community members. We've got about 10 or 15 sort of strong users who've contributed to the project, who are on there answering questions. So, you know, me or them can always help out if anyone has questions.
Oh, that's cool.
Or just hit me up on Twitter. Yeah, I'm a bit of a Twitter addict, so...
Yeah, me too.
If anyone wants to tweet me at Dave A. Glick, I'd be happy to answer questions or give you some advice on where to start looking and how to get started.
Cool. I'm going to put all of these links into the show notes for your convenience. Is there anything else you want to plug, upcoming user groups, conferences, or any other contact info you want to give out before we wrap things up?
No, Twitter is probably the best contact info for me. I don't really have anything to plug. I do want to suggest to anyone out there listening that if you're interested in open source, but you're afraid to get started or you're hesitant or you don't know if you can do it, please feel free to go ahead and hit me up on Twitter. I'd be happy to help anyone out there who wants to get started in open source. It's been extremely rewarding for me, both personally and professionally, and I'd love to help more people kind of take their first open source leap.
My guest today has been Dave Glick. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast is made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype and Audacity. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes.